Ferment is unique, distinctive, with a flavor profile quite unlike any other grape variety I ever tasted. The variety Gouaise Blanc is the parent of Ferment, making it half sibling to Chardonnay and Riesling, and it is no surprise when one starts looking at the styles they are produced today, one can see the similitudes with those varieties. Until recently, the traditional style of Hungarian Ferment has been sweet, more often than not blended with Arcevelo. It ripens late, is prone to botrytis, it retains high acidity and builds lots of sugar. In short, a godsend gift for dessert wine. But around the turn of the century, dry, varietal ferments start appearing and gaining traction. Producers quickly saw the potential. This is a grape that not only makes high quality wine at all sweetness level, but it can be used to make good sparkling wine too. It responds to Chardonnay-like winemaking techniques, such as lees aging, batonnage, malolactic conversion, and aging in barrel too, covering all the styles that are possible to produce with a white grape variety. With today's guest, Caroline Ghibli, who has been looking closely to the revolution in Hungary for the last 2 decades, we discussed how Ferment has become the leading white grape in Hungary, what are its characteristics, and looked into details the elements mentioned before. Also, a thanks to Wines of Hungary UK to organize this episode and making it possible. Hi, I'm Mattias Carpazza, and this is the Looking Into Wine podcast. Wine and winemaking can be complex, but this podcast has a simple mission. We want to give you the skills and tools to harness your passion about wine. Through this series, we will shine a spotlight on some of the different regions, process, and concept that shape the fascinating world of wine. I hope you enjoy the show and your own journey, Looking Into Wine. Welcome to Looking Into Wine. I'm Mattias Carpazza. Today's guest is a master of wine who traveled for many years to Central and Eastern Europe and seen the complete wine revolution across the region. She contributes on Oxford Companion of Wine, World Atlas of Wine. She also writes for Decanter, Ampers, JensisRobinson.com and other publication. She was the first foreign to be awarded Friends of Hungarian Winemakers, and she collaborated with Wines of Hungary, among many other things. She's here today to speak about the noble grape of Hungary, Ferment. Welcome to the show, Caroline Ghibli, Master of Wine.
Hello, nice to be here.
Thank you. It's great to have you here today. Today we're talking about Ferment, the fabulous white grape of Hungary. So just how and when do you discover it? Just to give a bit of feedback.
Oh, that's a good question. I've been going to Hungary since the very early 1990s. But I have to say, back then, ferment, particularly dry ferment, was actually mostly pretty horrible. So my discovery of it as a really exciting, high quality dry wine would have been about 2002, 2003, when I was lucky enough to taste with István Szepsi and taste the fabulous Uraya vineyard that he made in that year.
Those vintages have been very important for the development of dry ferment. I was reading that it was these years it all started, really.
Particularly, I think 2003 was a really big turning point because it was such a hot, dry year. There was like no botrytis, no asu really at all. And it made people start to think more widely about doing ferment as a serious dry wine. And, you know, it had always existed, you know, it was an afterthought though for when they couldn't make the sweet wines, the asu wines. But actually thinking about deliberately making ferment as a dry wine definitely required a change in thinking, because actually you want healthy grapes, you don't want rot, noble or otherwise. So thinking about managing the vineyards differently so the grapes are healthy, maybe sites that are not great for botrytis because they're high up and they're sunny and they're breezy, that sort of thing. So it was quite a big sort of change in thinking around that time.
I mean, one of the reasons we're here together today, because of a month ago now, we did a tasting for dry ferment across Hungary. And for me, I have been trying dry ferment for the last couple of years. It's pretty new to me, but I really falling in love with this grape. It's fantastic. So one of the things I discovered through the tasting, it was how various styles can be found in Hungary. Why can we find so many different styles of the variety, and what are they?
Partly it's a reflection of its parentage and its ancestry. So it's actually a cross of a grape called Hernischweiss and Alba Imputo Tarto, which is a almost extinct Romanian grape. But Hernischweiss is also known as Gouet Blanc, but it's the parent of so many noble grape varieties. So it's parent of Chardonnay, parent of Riesling, parent of Gamay, and, you know, there's a whole gamut of things. But, you know, really good quality credibility in that ancestry. And one of the things about that is I think that it's able to channel both some of its kind of Chardonnay identity and some of its Riesling, you know, sort of character. So it has a bit of both. And it depends a little bit on the winemaker's choice and where it's grown, exactly which direction you go in. And the other thing about it is that it's a relatively neutral grape, I would say. And actually that makes it a fantastic translator of terroir. So you can taste, you know, vineyards around Mard, which is probably the warmest part of the Tokaj region, and compare the wines to, you know, vineyards in the cooler north, like in Erdebenye and so on, and you get really quite a difference. And even literally vineyard to vineyard next door to each other, you can taste the differences because, you know, you're not distracted by strong aromatics. So you really get this sense of the earth and the place that the grape's grown in.
And especially in the Tokaj, they have so many soils and so many different aspects there, and incredible.
That's right. It's incredible because it's possibly one of the most complex volcanic soils regions in the world, I should say, because there are around 380 extinct volcanoes, but there have been layers and eons of different types of volcanism, and then hot water geysers that have stirred all the layers up and so on. And as well, you can go from, you know, Oraya to St. Tomasz to St. Becek to Kiraj, and each one will just be a little bit different, and that really comes through in the wines as well.
Absolutely. So we start seeing a bit of like single vineyard from different area of dry style of Tokaj on the market.
Definitely. And that's something that, you know, working with Wines of Hungary UK is something I really want to encourage, because I think many retailers, many restaurants have a ferment of some sort. But usually the kind of more entry level, easygoing, possibly stainless steel fermented, you know, sort of fresh, apple-y, kind of quite easy drinking, quite refreshing style. But there's so much more to the grape. And part of what we were trying to do was ferment February this year was kind of really emphasize that sense of place and the development of these single vineyard wines. And these more complex wines that can be, you know, sort of complex in the direction of a Riesling, or kind of also those kind of layered, oak fermented, Burgundian wines that can really be fabulous food matches.
Absolutely. I mean, I was speaking to a friend of mine. She works in a very famous restaurant in London, and she has one there, and she just enjoy having it. And she has a couple, and she enjoys to give for the consumer. There's something different to give to them, but she also enjoys the quality and the freshness, and then the grape, and it really goes well with the food. And so, talking about Tokaj, obviously the region is famous for the sweet wines, but in regards on the ferment, how? Because usually Tokaj is a blend. What does ferment add to the blends?
Yeah, well, if you're talking about sweet wine blends, the really crucial thing I think about ferment is that it always has this lovely vibrancy, this freshness about it. And that's why the sweet wines are so fantastic, because you have this amazing intensity of flavour and richness and sweetness, but always balanced by this brilliantly zesty, vivid acidity. So best sweet wines in the world in my view. of course, it's handily prone to noble rot as well. Plus, you get these amazing shriveled berries that are not just noble rotted, but they're really raisined as well. And then, you know, in a blend, I suppose, you know, there are dry Tokai blends, and there are, which would be generally majority ferment. Some harsh levelu, which is the daughter of ferment, which has a kind of fruitier, slightly more exotic, slightly more fleshy character. So that can add some nice aroma and mid-palate fruit. And sometimes people use a little bit of the Chaga Muscatay, which is yellow muscat, for aromas as well. But that can be quite dominant. So it can be usually just a small amount for perfume. But I suppose the beauty of the region is all these options can be played with. You know, because there are some fantastic pure harsh levelus now. An awful lot of, you know, fantastic ferments that are 100% ferment. But still, you know, some people like to blend a little bit. Some people like to go for the purity of the grape. So, but yeah, lots of choice for the winemaker.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things about ferment is the ability to produce from sparkling wines through lusciously sweet wines, and you can almost have a journey all through the different styles. And not many grape around the world, how many varieties around the world can do that. I can think of a couple, maybe. But it's truly incredible. And talking about the ferment, where obviously Tokaj is the key region, but where else do we find it in Hungary?
Yeah, well, you find it mostly in volcanic places. So Somló, which is an extinct volcano that sort of rises from the plain to the north of Lake Balaton. They like to describe it locally as the place God forgot his hat, because you've got this basalt cone rises out of the plain. So that's a great place for ferment. And then also to the north of Lake Balaton, again, typically volcanic areas like Badachon and some of the hills around there that are also volcanic. So it really suits these volcanic soils in Hungary. But yeah, it's kind of creeping out to other places. People are trying it just a little bit in Sopron near the lake and the Austrian border. And then beyond Hungary's borders, the next biggest grower is Slovenia, and it's grown quite widely in eastern Slovenia, and obviously a little bit into Austria as well. Austria grows a bit, so it's quite a big grape in, say, eastern Slovenia in Lower Styria, where again some fantastic results. And then there are little bits in Serbia, little bits in Slovakia. Obviously, part of Tokaj is in Slovakia as well. But it's not really, I mean, one or two people have tried it in the New World, but it just, so far, nobody's clicked with it, as I can find.
Yeah, well, it's something that is truly unique of these regions, and I think that is...
Oh, I forgot Croatia. They'll never forgive me if I don't mention Croatia, because that's the third biggest grower, and they call it either Pušipel or Moslavac, depending on the region it's grown in.
Absolutely. Yeah. We shan't just not say that. But I was saying that ferment is... one of the qualities being that is originally from Hungary and is from the region, it makes it unique to the region. Yeah. And I think also the fact that it's quite easy to pronounce is definitely one of the key selling points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And we're talking about the grape earlier. You were mentioning how it likes volcanic soil. How does it grow? Is it a vigorous grape? How do you describe the growing environment of...
To be honest, that depends a little bit on exactly where it's grown and what clones people have. Because, of course, in the communist era, there was an awful lot of selection of material for yield, because they wanted big volumes and as big as possible. So, you know, more recently, people like Ishvan Sepshi and quite a few other growers have now been looking for old vines and selecting clones from pre-communist times that have smaller bunches and deliberately lower yields. And of course, if you're on a steep volcanic slope, you're going to have much lower yields than if you're lower down on the flatlands and so on. So it is capable of quite big yields, but you know, the better producers are really moving away from that.
Okay, so there is a bit of clone research. It's one of the new things that you've seen happening with ferment. What other new styles have you seen produced in the country?
Well, I think that sparkling wine really kind of took off with the 2010 vintage, which was a shockingly cold, wet vintage, and acids were incredibly high. And that again got people thinking about ferment as raw material for traditional method sparkling wine, where you need that high acidity. So, you know, and there've been some amazing wines produced, and you know, people are still learning how to make them better, but there's been a real, you know, the last two or three years, so many people have launched great sparkling wines based on ferment. And there's some in Chomelot as well are based on ferment. So that's been one development. And I think another key development has been kind of better understanding of the vinification and the exact point of ripeness. Because I think in the early days of dry ferment, there was a lot of kind of trying to prove that they were making something serious. So picking the grapes very late, barrel fermentation, full malolactic, the works, you know, sometimes the wines were 15% alcohol. And I think now producers have kind of moved on from that and now actually have the confidence to pick a bit earlier, to rein back on the oak. Most people still using oak. It does suit oak quite well, but, you know, often bigger barrels rather than small ones, more used oak. So it's more subtle, but just focusing a bit more on the elegance and allowing the place to show through in the wine. So I'd say that's been a big step of progress as well. Not a change, but an evolution.
An evolution of the grape. I mean, the evolution is... The history of the grape can be traced back many, many years. It was, I think you were mentioning in the masterclass, it was late 15th century, if I'm not mistaken. And how did ferment arrive in Hungary? Do we know anything about that?
Well, we don't really know. I mean, we know that, or we can guess, because there was this, you know, huge development of offspring of Hernish Weiss all around the same sort of time in the Middle Ages. And when you look up some of the history of Hernish Weiss, it used to be named the laxative grape and shit the bed and other not very polite names, but it was possibly the first self-fertile grape with big white berries. So I think, you know, and again, if you ever get to taste it, and there is still some around in Central and Eastern Europe, it's very neutral and it's very high acid. So I think there was this huge evolution of people making crosses of this grape to see what would come out. So, and I think ferment is one of those things that arose at that time, probably similar time to Chardonnay and Riesling and all and so on and so on. But beyond that, you know, paper records and things don't really exist for this kind of rural community. So who knows? It's all a bit of speculation.
Well, they did. They just only discovered, and it was a cross with the Gouas Blanc. It's fairly recent.
Yes, that was fairly recent discovery, yeah.
As the style goes, we're saying that then it goes from sparkling to the dry style. And from this dry style, you were mentioning earlier, like the dry, light and fruity to the more Burgundian style. How does ferment age? Does it, especially on dry style?
Well, I mean, that's always one of those difficult questions when people have only been making it for like 20 years, and how they were making it 20 years ago is not the same as today. But I would say I did do a fantastic masterclass last year for Ferment February, and we had wines going back to 2003. And there were some really fabulous examples. 2003 from Sepchu was in great shape. We had a 2005 or 6 from Lenki, from Lenki Geyser. I also did a tasting, a complete vertical with a winery called Tobogo a couple of years ago, and we went back to 2003. So every vintage they'd made, they had kept samples of. So I can say confidently that if it's well made, it can age really well, at least for 20 years.
How do you identify dry ferment in a tasting? Obviously, you did so many tasting and competition. How do you identify ferment?
Yeah, well, one of the things to look for is always that vibrancy and that fresh acidity. And then I said it's relatively neutral, but it still does have some quite typical aromas, particularly pear and quince, and sometimes apple and citrus. And if there's any noble rot there, if we're going into the sweet wines, then you've got the dried apricot and mango and exotic fruit that come into play as well. So those are the kind of two spectra of aromas and flavours that I'd be looking for.
Absolutely. And the acidity, that very high.
That acidity and that kind of slightly mineral austerity sometimes as well. It's quite typical of the grape. So that's kind of what you're looking for.
I really like it as a style. And as I said, I only discovered it probably a couple of years ago. And I've been looking to get more and try it from different areas. And I really, really enjoyed them. And I think something definitely is growing. And as you work in the UK, in the UK, how do you see the trend for ferment? Is it people getting it?
I think people are starting to get it. I mean, there's no substitute for keeping on telling the story and showing it to people and showing them the different aspects of it, which we've now been doing for, I think we've done 3 Ferment Februaries, and, you know, trying to keep doing tastings and get it into people's glasses. You know, it's all very well me talking about it, but actually we want you to taste it and go, wow, this is delicious and this is interesting too. I think, you know, people are certainly, I mean, we had 170 people join the masterclass a couple of weeks ago, which says to me people want to know more.
Absolutely. I mean, it's great results there. And I invite all my listeners, most of them are in England, but also around the world, to go and try ferment, because I think it's a truly incredible grape. And now then it's moving towards this dry style and make it more accessible and something to have more often rather than all in the sweet style, which I know is a bit of a controversy in Tokaj, whether they should do dry wines. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, there certainly was in the early days. I think less so now, because I think people have understood that they can't live just from the sweet wines, because however wonderful they are, and they are amazing, people only drink a small glass on a special occasion. Whereas you can find an occasion to have a couple of glasses, obviously drinking in moderation, most days of dry wine, whereas you wouldn't for a sweet wine. And that's the reality of, you know, it would be a shame if the wonderful sweet wines disappeared, and I really hope they don't. But I think the dry wines can showcase what an amazing place Tokaj is, and it can bring drinkers into exploring the region more. So hopefully it will have the benefit of getting people to drink the dry Tokajs, the dry ferments, the dry harsh levelus, and will encourage them also to think about the sweet wines too.
And absolutely. I mean, it would be very much a shame to lose the sweet style of Tokaj. They're incredible, so definitely, and they're not to be lost. And Caroline, I think we cover everything I can think of about ferment. I can just say to everybody to go and try them and to learn more about this grape, because I think it's going to become more and more popular, definitely, in the next few years. And thank you for these 20 minutes together. And once again, Caroline Ghibli, Master of Wine, thank you for being here today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to talk about one of my favourite grapes. So thank you for spreading the word.
Today's guest was Caroline Ghibli, Master of Wine, and we discussed the wonderful Hungarian grape variety, Ferment. I would also like to thank Wines of Hungary UK for helping creating this episode. Remember to hit the subscribe button and to tell your friends about the podcast. And if you're finding this podcast valuable, consider leaving a review. Be sure to go to mattiascarpazza.com and to subscribe to the mailing list. It's the only way you can listen to the Pressage, the after-interview conversation with the guests. You can find Looking Into Wine on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and every major listening app. Music produced by Samuele Di Nardo, editing and mastering by Tommaso Ascoli.